You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 198 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Sunday evening, late into the night here. By the time we're done, it might be Monday morning Eastern time, but joining me on the podcast, because it is so late, it has to be Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
What's up, Brad? Yeah, it's been a little while since we've done one of these. I did one with Eric a few weeks back, I think for the Will Smith signing, and you know, it's been a fairly busy offseason, at least for the Braves standard, and but yeah, good to do one of these and some stuff to talk about.
Yeah, it's still been fairly quiet, I would say, overall in Major League Baseball, but the Braves have been arguably the most active team to this point. With that said, nothing has happened since the last time that Eric and I recorded a week ago. So we were due for one of these, obviously. There'll be a couple more of these throughout the offseason where nothing actually happens in an entire week. And as a result of that, we're going to look ahead more than behind on this podcast. I did want to stop real quickly and ask you kind of what you thought of the last two moves that you have not discussed on the podcast. It was Eric and I talking about Travis d'Arnaud and Chris Martin last time around. Anything that struck you as interesting about those two moves that you wanted to touch on and sort of spin forward? Because I know it's happened a while ago, but you haven't been able to weigh in this form yet.
Yeah, I think, you know, I liked both signings for what they were. It's hard to get super excited about two-year deals for either a platoon catcher or a seventh or eighth inning reliever, but I did like both moves. They felt like good depth moves for the front office to take care of early. I think there was a little bit, I was a little surprised by the reaction to d'Arnaud signing. You know, once Yasmani Grandal signed with the White Sox, and I think that was a couple of days before d'Arnaud actually signed with the Braves, it was apparent, and we talked about this on the podcast, that, you know, other than Grandal, there was really no one out there. And if the Braves wanted to make a splash, Grandal had to be the guy. And then I think d'Arnaud was pretty clearly, I think he was pretty clearly the second best option on the market. He's a guy who isn't going to wow you, but he was somebody who had a weird 2019 and bounced around from the Mets and the Dodgers, and then ultimately landed with the Tampa Bay Rays and was a key piece for them. If you talk to people around the Rays, somebody who was as valuable as anybody on that team, he was, I believe, their cleanup hitter for a decent chunk of the year. Somebody who is regarded as a pretty good pitch framer, a guy who calls a good game. He's been around the block for a while. And he's also familiar with the National League East, spending all those years with the Mets. So I liked it. 2 years and $16 million, I believe it was. You know, maybe it was an extra $1 million or two to get him, but I think that's kind of the price you pay. The catcher market has been pretty strong early in the winter. And then Martin, I think, is somebody who the Braves certainly enjoyed having. I think it's not crazy to say he was the team's best reliever down the stretch last year. And we talked about just how critical it was that whenever he went down in the first game of the playoffs, that, I mean, it changed the series. And I know people can say, well, it wasn't the reason they lost, and that's fine. But it really did change everything when he hurt himself before game one. So again, it's you worry a little bit with relievers, especially one like Martin, who's 33 or 34 years old. Again, a 2 year deal for $14 million. It's not a bad deal by any means. And if he's even close to the guy he was the last couple of seasons, he should be a really nice option for the seventh and eighth innings.
Yeah. And we'll leave it there for now. I think that, you know, we obviously covered it on the last podcast with Eric and I, so please go back and subscribe to the show, etc., when it comes to checking out on the full deep dives that we did on d'Arnaud and Martin. Yeah, but we can spin it forward a little bit now, I would say, to the non-tender deadline, which is on Monday. Teased it a little bit a few minutes ago, but that deadline is going to be interesting in some ways. There's not a ton going on for the Braves. I think there's not too much intrigue, but there's a couple of guys who at least could be interesting. The guys who are absolutely going to be tendered, we can kind of name right now, I think. Mike Foltynewicz is a lock, I would imagine. Luke Jackson feels like a lock at less than a $2 million projection for Luke. Dansby Swanson, of course, is a absolute lock. I guess the rest of the guys I think are likely. You might be able to, you might correct me and to put them into the lock category, but I would say Adam Duvall is likely at about a $3.5 to $4 million projection. Charlie Culberson seems to be very likely at sub $2 million projection, and then Johan Camargo at about $1.5 million, according to MLB trade rumors. Those guys feel like they're pretty much locks, but not, I guess, not quite in the lock category as far as Folty and Dansby are, for instance, but still very, very likely to do that. And then you have a couple of guys. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and I think it's important to remind everybody, these deals are not guaranteed. I mean, just because they tender them, one, there's the negotiation process. Again, those are just predictions or guesses by trade rumors. But yeah, it's worth remembering last year the Braves tendered basically everybody, and these are not deals guaranteed by any means. So they do have some flexibility in that regard.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely important to note. And it came into play last year with everything that went down with Aroides and et cetera. So it would not blow anybody away if the Braves were to tender one of these players and then not have them on the roster. That isn't that uncommon. But the guys who I think are more intriguing to discuss a little bit here, the top dollar guy is Shane Green, who we talked about a lot in the last few podcasts because of the fact that it felt like a very likely tender and still does, in my opinion. But there's at least, I guess, some question now after they spent so much money on the bullpen, and Green's projection is like in the $7 million range, $6.5 million, according to MLB trade rumors. I would go ahead and tender him pretty clearly, but we'll come back to that in a second. And then the other guys who are at least up for debate, Grant Dayton at about $800,000 projection. Because of what you just said about it being non-guaranteed, I would imagine they still do that because it's just basically just no money. And Dayton is not someone who's terribly interesting to me. And he's kind of old, by the way. He's 32, which surprised me in doing prep for this podcast. But that's, you know, it's less than $1 million non-guaranteed. There's not a whole lot of downside there. And then the last guy is John Ryan Murphy. That's the one where everyone's assuming he's not going to be tendered because it's $1.2 million. And he's like the Braves' sixth catcher, I think, at this moment.
Yeah, especially with a couple other guys progressing. Yeah, I mean, he's pretty clearly fourth, I think, right now between Flowers, Darnell, and even Alex Jackson. So he would be emergency only, and you can go grab an emergency guy for, a third of that price at some point.
Yeah, I mean, there's some value to having him non-guaranteed, but you can't even really trade him. There's not going to be any real value there. So he's the one I think I'm assuming is not going to be tendered. Is there anybody else on that list of guys, and I guess there are, 10 of them or so, that you're expecting to not be tendered, or is there actually any intrigue for you? Because I think it's fairly cut and dry on my end that, everyone but Murphy for me, but anybody else that you would sort of circle as a question mark on that list?
I think I'm with you. I think everybody but Murphy is going to get tendered. Grant Dayton is somebody who's kind of interesting. You mentioned his age. He's dirt cheap, but he's also somebody who the Braves have stuck with for a couple years. He's been through injuries with the team, and whenever he's gotten out there, I thought he's been decent. He's had problems staying healthy. But again, because he's going to make less than $1 million, why not? It's one of those things. You can never have too many relievers. Even if you bring him to spring training and you give him basically a month long tryout and then cut him before that, like 3 week before opening day deadline, you're out like $100,000. It's really not a whole lot of money. And I'm with you. I think there's really no upside to non-tendering Shane Green at this point. They gave up a couple decent prospects for him. And at $6.5 million, I think that's a fair value for him. We've touched multiple times on his peripherals last year and that he outperformed with the Tigers and then came back down to earth. But he was pretty good for the Braves after those first couple weeks. He looked a lot like the guy the Braves thought they were trading for whenever they made that deadline deal. So I would imagine, other than Murphy, who's really just kind of taking up space at this point, everybody will get tendered, and then you have the next 3 or 4 months to kind of figure out what you want to do with them.
Yeah, I think that, obviously Green isn't quite I don't know. I don't know how to say this. I think he's worth that number, the projected salary of $6.5 million, pretty easily. I think he'd be tradable on that deal if nothing else. So there's no reason not to offer it. If the Braves just didn't want to have him at that number, I would sort of understand it because of all the outlay that they'd already done in the bullpen. But even if that was the case, even if it was just to trade him, which I wouldn't necessarily do, but even if they just want to do that, it's cheap enough in practice or in theory that you could pick it up and trade him. I think you would have no problem trading him if you wanted to do that. You wouldn't get a ton for him because it's not a massive bargain. I mean, $6.5 million for Shane Green, I think, is good value, but it's not some incredible value for someone who's going to just return this massive prospect haul if you trade him. But still, there's just no reason not to do it, in my opinion, particularly because it's non-guaranteed, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I wish there was more intrigue for our purposes on the podcast, but there's really not, in my opinion. I think there's one non-tender guy with Murphy, and if they didn't tender Dayton, like, I wouldn't care necessarily.
We're not going to do an emergency pod tomorrow night if they don't tender Grant Dayton.
I mean, no. And the other, I mean, I can already hear some people asking now about Adam Duvall, because this time last year there was the same sort of dance that they did with Duvall. You know, if it's less than $4 million as projected, again, not a slam dunk, ridiculous value for Adam Duvall, but because of where they are in the outfield at the moment, they kind of need Adam Duvall. We are very pro Adam Duvall in this podcast in general, I think. At least I am. I will speak for myself on this one. But
sure,
Adam Duvall for sub $4 million, given the state of the outfield, is kind of a no-brainer for me. So go ahead and do that. I can already hear people asking about that, but I'm sold on that one. Go ahead.
If they stuck with him last year for $3 million, don't you think they're going to stick with him again?
I would be stunned if they didn't. I mean, I'm only bringing it up just to be devil's advocate more than anything, because I would be absolutely floored if they didn't tender him at sub $4 million.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I think he'll play more this year, honestly. I mean, from what we've heard and what Anthopoulos has said publicly, I think if the season started today, they would actually be in a platoon with Duvall and Markakis at this moment. Now, how much that holds up or how much that changes, et cetera, is up for debate. But I do think that Duvall enters the season with a real role, and you have to keep him. So,
yeah, I do too. And I think there's value in, I mean, you know what you're getting with him. It's not some big surprise. So, yeah, it's worth keeping him around for a pretty minimal cost.
We totally agree on that. So if anything happens on Monday that is a surprise, we will cover it on our next podcast. But I'm expecting a relatively ho-hum non-tender deadline, and then maybe some more intrigue with guys like Dayton as we get closer to spring training if they are not performing or if not terribly sexy in nature. All right, Scott, we're going to do a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some mailbag stuff, because we are at that point in the offseason where nothing else is going on. So we're going to talk about some mailbag. Hold on tight, everybody. Yeah. We'll be right back.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, Scott, let's talk about some mailbag. I picked out 4 or 5 of these. We got a lot of questions. So, by the way, thank you to everyone that submitted a question. I got a lot more options than I thought I was going to get. So, shouts to all of you. You're all ready to talk about the Braves in November. And now it's December as we're talking now. But, yeah, I was impressed. So, thank you for all the questions. Let's dive right in, though. The first one comes from Mr. I believe it's Seifert. My apologies if that's the wrong pronunciation on Twitter. And it's a pretty simple one. What do you expect from Austin Riley in 2020? That's the entire question. And it's, as much as that's kind of simple, it is kind of interesting because Austin Riley last year was extremely hot and cold. So I will leave it there for now. Scott, what do you expect from Austin Riley?
You know, that's kind of the million-dollar question, because if he's going to be the guy that he was in his first, you know, 6 weeks in the majors, then the need for a, you know, power bat, right-handed bat, third baseman, whatever you want to call it, goes down significantly. But I think maybe it's just my recollection or what I've seen, but it seems like so many folks have almost overlooked just how bad Riley was after that first 6 weeks or so to begin his career. I mean, he was really, really bad. Struck out more than a third of his plate appearances. Really wasn't walking at a very good clip. There wasn't a ton to really like, honestly. I guess his defense was, especially in the outfield, was improved and better than I think what people thought it was going to be. And that was an encouraging sign. But really, it was a really rough go for Austin after maybe July 1 and from there. So I really don't know what to expect from him. It seems like if you read Mark Bowman, he expects Riley to begin the year in Gwinnett. Now, things can obviously change and spring training will probably play a pretty big role in that. But Bowman sure seems to think they're going to give Riley a little more time in the minors to figure things out. He's always been a guy who's had some swing and miss concerns. And while he obviously has some potential and he has a chance to be a solid contributor for the Braves down the road, I'm just not sure 2020 is going to be that year. So I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but ultimately I'm going to guess he begins the year, maybe almost in kind of what Adam Duvall did last year, begin the year in the minors. And then whenever an injury arises, perhaps he gets a shot with the big league Braves.
Yeah, I mean, I could already hear people saying, like, why is he going to be in Gwinnett? He killed Gwinnett last year, and I'll be the first one to acknowledge that. He had a 146 WRC plus in Gwinnett. He was lighting the world on fire before he came up. But even then, he had one, I remember this vividly, a 2 week stretch where he was just terrible in Gwinnett. Like, he's just going to be the kind of guy who's going to be hot and cold, I think, for the duration. Some of that is going to be mitigated as he gets more comfortable, I would imagine. But I've never been the biggest Austin Riley fan. I do think he's very talented. I think he has a role in the future for the Braves. But I'm with you. Like, 2020 does not seem to be the arrival date that people might have imagined it being a year ago or maybe 6 months ago at this point in time. You referenced how bad he was. I'm just going to read the numbers again. The last 50 games that Austin Riley played in the major leagues, he had a 170 batting average, a 237 on-base percentage, and a 346 slugging. That's a sub-600 OPS over 170 plate appearances or so. Like, I know it's not that big of a sample size, but he was just terrible. He really was. Plus, you throw in the fact that he's not a gold glover defensively, and he can't really run. Like, that combination is not great. You better hit. If you're Austin Riley's profile, you got to hit, and he didn't hit. So, I know he hit the cover off the ball early on when he arrived, and that's worth pointing out too. Like, he was awesome for that stretch of time, but he does seem to be the kind of guy who pitchers adjusted to, and he didn't adjust back. I'm not giving up on Riley by any stretch of the imagination, but you can't go in, at least this is me talking now, I don't think you can go into 2020 with him as a planned part of your prominent lineup on opening day. Like, maybe he impresses in spring training, like you said, and just makes it to where you have to have him on the team. That's a good problem to have. But at this moment in December, on December 1st, as we're recording this, you can't, at least in my mind, you cannot plan on Austin Riley being anything close to everyday player on the team. You just can't. No. That's where I am on it.
Well, and I think for me, I think as things stand on, you know, December 1st is where we're recording this, I think I would almost rather, if it's between, if the offseason works out to the point where it's Johan Camargo and Austin Riley as your third base options, and I don't think it's going to come to that, but let's just go along with it. I think I would prefer Camargo playing almost every day than Riley playing just against lefties and basically being in a platoon. I would rather him be in Gwinnett and playing and getting regular at bats. That's just me personally. Again, I'm with you. By no means are we giving up on Riley after a couple of poor months after such an incredible start to the year, because he really was. He's shown throughout his minor league career and then obviously whenever he debuted with the Braves, just what kind of impact his power can bring to a game. But again, they have to find a little more consistency and certainty with him, I think, before they hand over the keys for anything significant.
Yeah, and worth noting on the we have another question in a second about the Camargo Riley duo at third base, which we'll get to. But they have the same splits. It's not an ideal platoon, let's just say. I know Camargo is a switch hitter, but Camargo hits left-handed pitching well. Like that's his side of the plate that he hits well, and so does Riley. So they're not a great complement to each other. Ed Camargo is a better fielder, for instance. He's older. I'm obviously a little bit lower on Camargo than some people are and have been for a while, and we were, I guess, right about that last year. But yeah, they're not a great platoon partnership. Let's just say that.
No, I've got to think. I mean, if this team's trying to win a World Series, I think you have to have a more solidified third base pairing. And this kind of does lead into our next question, but I think you have to aim a little bit higher than those two.
Yeah, let's ask the next question now. A couple of different people actually asked the same question, so I'm not going to attribute to any single person. I kind of combined them all, so my apologies on that. But basically the gist is, do you feel more comfortable with Ender and Ciarte in center field every single day, or the combination of Camargo and Riley at third base? And you can't say neither, Scott. So you have to pick one. Which one do you like more, Ender every single day in center or third base? I know my answer, but I will let you go first.
Yeah, this isn't really much for me, at least. I would take Ender in center field and then upgrade third base. What about you?
Yeah, it's fairly clear for me. I mean, we went from being very high on Ender to being low on him when people thought he was an awesome hitter, and to the point where I am now high on him, I think, compared to the consensus, because Ender, you know what he is. Like, you know, at least I know what he is. He's a slightly below average hitter, but in center field with good glove, and he's not that bad of a hitter. Like, his WRC plus is between 90 and 100 in five straight seasons. So that's basically the epitome of average to slightly below average, which is not sexy at all. But he's only going to be 29. He's a really good defender at a premium position. Like, that guy is not going to blow you away. But if that's your seventh best position player, you're fine. And that's what it would be. Yeah. But I think that's very, very, very clearly a safer, better option than third base right now. It would be. So, I mean, it's definitely possible that third base would be better, because we've seen Camargo have a great season 2 years ago. We've seen Riley have a great month last year. But I think if we're being honest about what's the most likely outcome of those two things, Ender is so much safer that he's the only answer.
You know, I can envision the Braves next year winning the division, winning the National League, whatever you want to call it, with Ender as their starting center fielder. I can see that.
Yes, I agree.
I don't think I can get to, barring Austin Riley just ascending into superstar overnight, I just don't see how I can get there with either Camargo or Riley being their everyday third baseman. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe I'm in the minority here, but I think they have to get a better, more certain option at third base if this is a team that wants to repeat, win the division for the third year in a row, and hopefully make a run in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that you would do it, to play devil's advocate, I think that you could maybe do that at third base if you upgraded somewhere else, like the corner outfield spot, for instance. Like, if you went out and made a big trade, a big splash trade for a great corner outfielder, maybe you go into the season and have your only weakness in the lineup be third base. Like, that is conceivable to me, and that's a path where most teams have one weak spot in their lineup, and if that's third base, then so be it. But you can't go into the season with third base as it is, plus Markakis and maybe Duvall in a corner spot, and have Ender. Like, that doesn't work.
And Dansby, who...
Right, and Dansby,
I mean, exactly. He's never shown he can be a consistent hitter through, you know, 3.5-4 years in the majors now.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's perfectly fine at shortstop because of the defense he plays. I think his overall contributions are fine. But lineup-wise, it's just, it really is tough to get to a lineup that you like with no upgrade at third base. It's just, it's hard. You'd have to get a big splash trade piece somewhere. Like, I'm trying to think of even a name to throw out there, but like a 4-win corner outfielder. Like, for it to make any sense at all to go mm-hmm. into the season.
You would have to go out and get a Nicholas Castellanos, a Marcelo Zuna, I think one of those kind of players.
And even then, that isn't without, for me yeah, that's not yeah, even that's yeah. not that's not even that, that's not even that good. I mean, those guys are helpful and they're better than what you have now, but sure. would you rather have the Marquegas Duval platoon and Josh Donaldson, or would you rather have the Camargo Riley duo and Castellanos? I would certainly rather have Donaldson.
No, for sure.
Not even close.
I think that's kind of what, and I know we're going down the rabbit hole a little bit here, as no, we always fine. Do.
It's a mailbag show, Scott. This is the whole point of this.
Right. Yeah. It's almost midnight. I think on the very real chance, and I'm sure the Braves are preparing for this, on the very real chance that Josh Donaldson signs elsewhere, they have to figure out a plan B, and they won't have a ton of time to figure out a plan B. I've had the sense that as every day passes, I think it's less likely the Braves reunite with Donaldson. That's just kind of a gut feeling, and it could be totally wrong. But you do get the sense, and I think most Braves fans share this opinion, that if they don't get Donaldson, if some team just offers a ludicrous contract or he just wants to move on for whatever reason, they have to have a legitimate plan B because of their other options internally right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. We'll get to Donaldson a little bit later, I think, as part of at least one of my answers to one of these questions. But that's probably enough on the Camargo Riley duo segment of the podcast. Next question comes from Mike Posta or Pasta. I'm not really sure which one it is, so my apologies. And he says, with all of the hype around Drew Waters and Christian Pache, is it better for the Braves to go for it in 2020 by maybe trading one of them? Again, that's the biggest part of this question, is by maybe trading one of them, or would you rather hold tight for a longer, stronger window of contention laying up for the future, like 2022 and beyond? So basically, it comes down to, would you rather, if it meant being competitive, more competitive this year in 2020, would you rather trade one of those big position player prospects, or would you rather hold on tight, knowing that it probably might make you a little bit worse now, but also lengthen your competition window?
For me, with stuff like this, it just comes down to what you can get for them. I would not actively try to trade either of those two players away. I would ultimately prefer to use some of the pitching depth to make a trade happen. But it just depends on the return. I mean, you know, if you're talking about a player with a year or two of control, unless they are a superstar, I wouldn't trade either. I'm a little bit lower on Waters personally, so I think I'd be more inclined to trade him. Maybe for a controllable pitcher or something like that. But ultimately, I it's hard to answer just because you don't know what their value is. I mean, if you can add a legitimate star, if it was Trevor Story and you had to include one of those guys, then it's like, okay, maybe I would do that. Or Mookie Betts or Lindor, or whoever it may be. You know, you never want to say no. A prospect is off limits, and I don't think either of those guys are in that tier. But ultimately, just hanging on to them on the chance that they're good, because there's a very real chance that one of those two guys don't work out, and then you missed a chance to trade them when their value was highest.
Yeah, I'm sure longtime listeners know that I'm going to say this probably right now, but I am generally pro trading prospects for the right price. You don't want to give those guys away. They're very, very good prospects. But since I've been doing this on the podcast, there is one prospect that I've said was off limits, and it's Ronald Acuna. So that tells you where my bar is. The Braves have had a lot of good prospects since that time. A lot of them have worked out. Some of them have not worked out as well. But for me, if you're not an absolute uber elite, like I'm talking about top five prospect in baseball kind of guy, I am willing to trade you for the right price. And for me, neither one of those guys, Waters and Pache, are on that level. They're very, very good prospects, but they're not Ronald Acuna. So yes, they should be available. Am I actively trying to trade them? No. I mean, you have to tell me what's going to be the price, because, you know, I will say, I would not give up those guys without a pretty legitimate star level player in return. Like, you're not going to give up those guys for an unimpressive prospect. Unimpressive player overall. I guess there's like a theory of maybe like you get a guy on a great contract that's a great value in exchange for one of those guys. But for me, I'm aiming higher. I would want a, you know, 4-win, 5-win player, at least projected, to part with either one of those guys. That'd be where I would be on that. So, yeah, I don't know, some combination of both. I do think that this is the time. I mean, this is kind of the question and kind of not, but what do you make of, like, I think 2020 is very clearly an opportunity for the Braves to win the World Series. I'm not telling you that they're going to be the favorite, but I am, I'm appreciative of keeping the window as long as it possibly can be. But at the same time, I do think that there is an element that they need to strike while the iron is hot with a bunch of their cheaper guys right now, like Ronnie and Ozzie making no money. This is kind of the time to go, maybe not all in, but very much in. So I'm willing to go ahead and push a little bit for me.
No, I'm with you. And I think, as you just alluded to, I mean, there's a fine line between being stupid and being reckless. And, you know, you see like football teams do it, it seems like, and they'll go crazy with trades, and they'll kind of limit themselves into a 1 or 2 year window. Well, if they don't win anything, then they're out of luck, right? So I don't think the front office is going to do that. I think they're going to be cautious with trading their controllable assets. But I also think this is not a front office, and maybe I'm wrong, but one that's going to push all their chips in suddenly, because they know they already have a pretty good product on their hands already. It's just a matter of striking the right deal. And again, as I said a little while ago, ultimately, I think if they are going to make a trade, just based on the makeup of the farm system right now, they'd be much better off trading some of those pitchers and some of that pitching depth instead of the few couple of bats they have that think they can make an impact in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I agree. And we got a bunch of questions about, like, arrival times for Waters and Pache and some of the other prospects. I'm going to save some of those for Eric, because Eric's more in that sweet spot of prospect evaluation, with all apologies to you, Scott. But I know I can't talk about prospects the way that Eric can. So Waters and Pache, like, for me, it's like, how much do they hit this year? Because there is going to be a spot for them, I think. If one of them just plays out of their mind this season and forces their way up, as constructed, the Braves have two spots in the outfield that are not exactly going to be off limits for them. So if one of those guys goes nuts and finds himself on the roster in July, I won't be stunned by that. But at the same time, there's not a place for them really to start the season in Atlanta, I don't think. So I don't know.
No, I think they're young. I mean, these aren't 24-year-olds, you know.
They're young.
Very few plate appearances. Not even just above, you know, in double A, but even triple A. So I think they would do well. You know, if you told me right now they were going to spend the entire 2020 season in Gwinnett, I think that would be perfectly fine. It probably means that the big league Braves outfield ended up working out too, which is a good thing. But with guys like this, there's just no reason to rush. You know that you have internal options at the big league level who can at least be passable and serviceable, if not outright good. So there's just no need to rush them the way that some of these younger guys were pushed through the system a couple of years ago.
Yep, strongly agree on that, and we will obviously keep track of those guys in the very near future. All right, one or two more here, Scott, before we get out of here on this fine Sunday evening. Next one comes from Will Hutchison, who asks, would you rather sign a free agent starting pitcher in the Wheeler, Bumgarner, Keuchel tier, or trade for a starting pitcher in the John Gray, Freeland, Matthew Boyd, someone in that range? So a little bit worse pitcher, but under more control, potentially cheaper, factoring in the cost there. And obviously we have to guess on costs, so there's no actual like projection of what a trade like that's going to be. But would you rather spend the money, like big time money, on one of the better guys that are available now, or maybe use your resources to trade for a cheaper option that's under control, but maybe not quite as good?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they've already given out one of their draft picks in order to sign Will Smith, I'm almost more in favor of signing another free agent with draft pick compensation, because you're already kind of, at this point, you're not really working to pull together as much draft pool money as you possibly can. You're already out your second highest pick. Now, maybe they regain that if Donaldson goes elsewhere. But for me, I would much rather get somebody like Zach Wheeler, who I'm much higher on than someone like Bumgarner. I really don't want anything to do with Bumgarner unless it's a really good deal a team-friendly deal, which just doesn't seem super likely at this point. You know, as far as trades go, it's hard to say because you just never know what the pitching market's going to be. You know, they asked about somebody like John Gray. I'm a big John Gray fan. I see a fair amount of him on the West Coast. I think he's a guy who needs to, who hasn't quite hit his potential and hasn't hit his ceiling. But I think if you get him out of half of his games in Coors Field, I think you could unlock something. Same with Kyle Freeland. Matthew Boyd has the crazy strikeout numbers, and I know he's appealing to a lot of front offices. It's just hard to answer that when you just don't know. I mean, if the price for John Gray was Bryce Wilson and Shea Langeliers, maybe not Shea, but like a middle tier hitting prospect, then yes, I would say do it tomorrow. If the price for John Gray was going to be Kyle Wright, Drew Waters, and can't do it. Pass. Right. So that, I guess that's kind of where I didn't answer that question super well, but that's kind of where I'm at on it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we need some specifics on this kind of thing. I do think that I am not necessarily pro throwing a bunch of money at any of the free agent starting pitchers. There are some price points where I would like that. But realistically, do I think that they're going to be signing a deal for a top of the line starting pitcher that I'm actually going to like? probably not. It's not impossible, but it's not likely in my opinion. So if you throw that out there as a qualifier, then trades start looking a little bit better. But, you know, it all depends on how much money the starting pitchers are going to get. Like if you can get Cole Hamels at a discount, like I'd rather do that, for instance. I'd rather, even if it's Keuchel at a relative discount, like I don't think Keuchel's going to blow you away as we saw this year, like, but he's a solid mid-rotation guy that will really help you. So, you know, no definitive answer for me on this, but yeah, I'm open to all things. But as I said a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, trade stuff is just so hard to discuss. I know people, like, half the questions we got were throw out your favorite trade proposals, and it's like, okay, I'm not going to get any good at that, and because they're just coming out of nowhere. Once we get a real rumor, I can build an offer off of it. You know what I mean? Like I can start thinking about stuff through the prism of something that's actually out there, but I'm not going to throw a dart at just pick a guy out of random to trade for. I'm just not good at that. You're better at it than I am. Yeah. I think, Scott, but
no, I mean, it's hard. I mean, we don't know who's available. We don't know what teams are looking for. And I think so much of this off season, you know, all the talk of is Francisco Lindor going to get traded and is Mookie Betts going to get traded? And, you know, are the Cubs going to retool and trade away? I mean, it's just hard to know what these front offices are really going to do. Kind of reminds me of what the Indians have done the last couple of years in the offseason, where supposedly all of their starting pitchers are available. And in last summer, finally, one of them got traded with Trevor Bauer. You know, it's tough to know who is truly available and who isn't. You know, I think the Braves, or not just the Braves, but every team, I think all GMs for the most part, listen on just about every player. They're going to tell you no on a lot of guys. I mean, if somebody called asking Anthopoulos about Acuna or Freeman, the answer is obviously going to be a quick no. But I think teams, especially in today's landscape, I think more and more teams are at least open and open to discussions. Again, it doesn't mean trades are going to happen. But because of that, it's hard to, you know, would I like to get Francisco Lindor on the Braves? Yes, absolutely. Do I have any idea what it would cost to get Francisco Lindor on the Braves? No, I have no idea. To answer questions like that, it's a little tough. Yeah,
it is. And especially with the guys who are, you know, going to be free agents fairly soon, who are incredible. Like Betts is the one. It's like, okay, any offer that I throw out there, every Braves fan's going to hate. It's just funny. Like if I'm trying to be realistic about what it would actually take, most fans are going to hate it. And if I'm not, then there's no real point. So yeah, we'll come back to that if there's anything actually reported, but Anthopoulos has been so good about not getting stuff in the media that it's kind of hard for us right now to guess what they might do. Okay. Last one, I think, on the podcast today, Scott, comes from Brian on Twitter, and he says, and by the way, I think this is sort of a play on a hypothetical that we've been talking about quite a bit in the last few weeks. But the question is, if I told you the Braves could only make one more reasonable addition to the roster and do absolutely nothing else the rest of the winter, who would it be? So basically, the question is, we know the current roster right now. I think if they could only sign basically one player right now, the rest of the free agent period and do absolutely nothing else, which is not realistic, but it's an interesting question. Building on the rest of the roster, with what we know, it makes it kind of interesting. And also, for me, it's kind of easy, actually. But what would you choose as your one need to address if you only had one move to make?
You know, I guess if I'm going to stay within the reasonable one, like I don't know. I personally don't think Anthony Rendon is, like, the most outrageous thing I've ever heard, because I think he's going to take a shorter deal. Like, I think he's going to take, like, a five-year, $200 million deal or something like that.
I think it's more reasonable now because of the money they already spent. But yeah. I do think that you're right. It's not – like, Gerrit Cole is inconceivable to me, whereas yes, Rendon absolutely. Is, like, really, really unlikely, but not – inconceivable.
Yeah, like 5% chance. Yeah. So, I mean, sure, Rendon, I'm with you. I think for me, I think it would be Donaldson. I think he makes the biggest impact on the roster in an area where they just don't have a ton of great options right now. You know, as long as the contract is fine, and I think it ultimately will be, I would probably take Donaldson over somebody like Zach Wheeler, who does have some questions, or Bumgarner. There's really no, you know, Marcelo Zuna doesn't do a ton for me. I think he's a solid player, but not a great one. Castellanos is a pretty good hitter, but the defense worries me a little bit. I worry he's more of a DH than an outfielder. So, for me, it would be Donaldson.
Yeah. I think this is very easily a comparison between Donaldson and whichever starting pitcher that you think is the best, because those are the only options for me. I think there's not anybody else, given where the Braves are roster-wise and who is available. You know, clearly the best free agents on the market are the guys who we know are out there, like Gerrit Cole, Rendon, Strasburg. They're not coming to Atlanta. So, because of the reasonable caveat that was in the question, I scroll past those guys. And for me, it comes down to Donaldson versus Zach Wheeler, because I think Wheeler is my favorite of the free agent pitching options. Is he the best right now? You know, that's a question that's open to be answered, but he is the youngest of all the intriguing top end options. Pretty clearly has the least amount of mileage on his arm, so it comes down to those two guys for me. I think I would go Donaldson as well. Position players are so much safer, and Donaldson's just a better player right now than Wheeler. Yeah. Like, Donaldson's the best player on the market that the Braves could actually sign realistically, like right now today. Obviously, the age stuff and the durability stuff before this year are real things, but if you tell me 2020 only, Donaldson is like the biggest slam dunk answer in the world. Like he's the best player they could sign. It's just how much do you value that position versus starting pitcher, and how much do you think he might decline, etc. But I would still go with Donaldson. He's my answer. If you wanted to argue Wheeler, I would listen to you, because the Braves have two glaring needs at starting pitcher, and Wheeler is young and very talented. He's the only guy I could see over Donaldson as a reasonable answer, because I'm not a Bumgarner guy. I can already hear people yelling about Bumgarner. I think if it's Bumgarner versus Donaldson, Donaldson is very clearly the right answer out of those two guys.
No, I'm with you. And I'm with you, too, on Wheeler. I think he's the guy if they are going to go after a pitcher. And I think it's clear the Braves are interested in Wheeler. Who knows where his free agency goes? I worry a little bit. He seems like a prime candidate to get overpaid. You know, if I had to put money on a free agent right now who is going to get a big contract and everybody's going to go, oh my God, I don't know about that. I think Wheeler's probably who I would put it on.
Well, here's a question for you. Like, in that vein, the MLB Trade Rumors projection for Wheeler was 5 years, $100 million.
Yeah.
Does that seem like a lot of money to you?
The years worry me a little bit. I mean, I think the Trade Rumors projection is probably pretty close, pretty accurate at five and 100. I don't know if I would necessarily go that high. I just worry about going 5 years with pitchers. He's somebody who I would obviously like on the Braves, and I guess if you're in for 4 years, maybe you're in for five. But I think I would cringe a little bit. Like, if it came out tomorrow the Braves signed Zach Wheeler, I'd be really excited, and I think it would obviously make them a much better team. But if it was for 5 years and $100 million, I would worry a little bit.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I mean, he's been very, very good the last two seasons. Before that, he was very good, but then had an injury-plagued year in 2017. It wasn't as good when he pitched. His age is interesting to me. Like, he feels younger than this, but he'll be 30 in May, which isn't, like, super old, but I think if you polled a casual fan, you might think he's a little bit younger than that because he's not pitched all that much. Like, for instance, I think Julio Teheran is younger than Zach Wheeler, if I'm putting that together in my mind. Yeah, he is. Julio's younger than Zach Wheeler, which I would be, if you weren't in this world and just like pay attention casually to the NL East the last few years, there's no way you'd guess that. Because Julio's been around for so long, and he's just pitched so many innings.
On that note, there was a Twins writer who was doing like an off-season preview, and he refused to believe that Julio was only 28 years old. Like, he was convinced he was at least 36.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around forever, and Julio will be 29 in January. It's insane. But, yeah, to your point, I mean, 5 for 100 for Wheeler, I would not be the guy that got on Twitter and yelled about that being too much money, but is that a value? No, it's not. Like, it might be top dollar. It might be what you have to pay, though. And going back to Donaldson, I guess so we can just make sure we answer the question in full. If it's Donaldson for what we think is going to be a reasonable deal, like, you know, 3 for 75 or something versus Wheeler 5 for 100, Donaldson's the answer.
I would take Donaldson. Yeah, so, me too. And then just trade for a pitcher somewhere.
And obviously, you know, the whole premise of the question is kind of funny because if it just did Donaldson, nothing else, they still have a lot of holes because starting pitching would be a mess. But, yeah, if you're going to do one thing to fix the roster right now, I think Donaldson, the combination of him being the best player and fixing a hole is the one that puts it over the top for me. And I'm always going to value position players over starting pitchers. I just am, because they're just safer. Yeah, I don't know. That's probably enough. Scott, what do you think?
I know. I was hoping we would get a little, when we knew we were doing this podcast, I was hoping we would get a little more news. And of course, as I talk, we're rambling, coming up on an hour here, but I was hoping we'd have some news, but I think we covered some good bases. And this time in a week, it will be the winter meetings, which is always exciting. And maybe we will get some action on Monday, of course, right after we do this podcast. You know, maybe there's a trade or something like that. It's usually a pretty busy day or two with the non-tender deadline. But as we talked about earlier, I think it'll be a fairly calm one for the Braves.
Yeah, it would not surprise me if they made a move in the next few days, because that's just the timing and where we are on the schedule. But the Braves went more than a week between transactions, which was breaking news, apparently, because they're the only team that was doing stuff consistently before that in all of Major League Baseball. So we were due for one of these, and I think we did okay to fill the time. As a programming note, I don't know when the next podcast is going to be. A week from today, I am not available at all on Sunday. I will be in Charlotte to cover the Hawks and the Hornets, which is not exciting in any way, shape, or form, but I will be pretty much indisposed for several hours.
I am not an NBA guy in any way, shape, or form, and I know that is a horrible game.
Yeah, it's not going to be great, I don't think, but that's where I'm going to be. So I have to drive 4 hours and then cover a basketball game and then drive 4 hours back, so I'm not available on Sunday. We will do a podcast somewhere around the winter meetings. If the Braves do something this week, we will probably break in emergency fashion or maybe do a podcast on Saturday or something like that. Have no fear. We're not going anywhere. The podcast will not be in its normal time slot unless something crazy happens and maybe you get Scott and Eric again a week from today. But just keep that in mind. I tried to make sure we got you guys a podcast today. And Scott was a trooper and got right out of the car after being in the car for several hours and is now recording this podcast late. So shouts to Scott for that one. But I guess the best way to say this would be subscribe to the podcast. If you subscribe to the podcast, you will always have it when it comes. There you go.
That's right. Yeah, no, it was a long end of the Thanksgiving weekend, but I'm here. And as always, thanks to everybody for listening. Tell a friend and be sure to subscribe.
All right, everybody. That's your post-Thanksgiving mailbag. Hope you guys enjoyed your holiday. We will see you in the very near future, so stay tuned for all that.